We're going to move then to our third and final draft advisory opinion on this agenda, which is draft advisory opinion 2024-12 from Mr. Sean McCutcheon. And we have Ms. Rufner from the policy division. We also have counsel from the requester here. Mr. Backer, if you could come up to the table, we'd appreciate it. And we appreciate you coming in person. Ms. Rufner, whenever you are ready, if you could give us a presentation about this item.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And good morning, commissioners. Agenda documents 24-38-A and 24-38-B contain draft responses to an advisory opinion request by Sean McCutcheon regarding Maine's 2024 election for U.S. Senate, which will be conducted using ranked choice voting. The request asks whether the first round of vote tabulation counts as a general election and whether subsequent rounds of vote tabulation, if any, count as runoff elections under the Federal Election Campaign Act and thus should be given separate contribution limits. Four candidates have qualified to appear on the ballot, which means there will be a maximum of three rounds of vote tabulation. The requester wishes to contribute $9,900 or $3,300 for each round to a particular candidate, with the second and third $3,300 contributions being refundable should the candidate not qualify for those rounds. Both drafts conclude that the individual rounds of vote tallying in Maine's ranked choice voting system do not qualify as separate elections under the Act. Rather, the entire ranked choice voting process, including all necessary rounds of vote tallying for Maine's 2024 U.S. Senate general election, constitutes a single election, currently subject to a $3,300 contribution limit per individual. The Act and Commission regulations define a general election as an election held in even number years on the Tuesday following the first Monday in November. Here, only a single election will be held, with voters casting ballots on Tuesday, November 5th, 2024. Maine's ranked choice voting system will tabulate votes over the course of several rounds, but the request does not indicate, and the commission is not aware of, any date after November 5th prescribed by Maine law on which voters will be able to cast votes in this election. Under the plain language of the commission's regulations, this election is thus a general election. The commission received two comments on this request and one comment from requester's counsel on the draft AOs. Thank you.
Excuse me. Thank you very much. Colleagues, let me open it up for questions or discussion. Commissioner Lindenbaum.
Thank you. I don't have any questions, but I do just want to notice one of the comments that we received. We received comments in many of these advisory opinion requests, and we appreciate all of them. I think I can say that speaking on behalf of my colleagues. But I particularly appreciate this comment we received from the League of Women Voters of Maine, Represent Us, and Fair Vote. They submitted a comment very early that explained ranked choice voting to those who may or may not be familiar with it. And that was particularly helpful, I think, in this situation to me, the staff, and hopefully to my colleagues as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Colleagues, additional questions? Commissioner Traynor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bracker, thank you so much for being here today. And I've read the comments that you submitted, but I wonder if you could flesh those out a little bit and kind of tell us your opinion between the two different drafts that we have before us today.
Mr. Backer, can you turn your, make sure, make sure it's green. Touch
it. Right? Okay.
There you go. Thank you. Please.
You know, from my read of the two drafts, I think there's only one differentiation was this citation to the Ninth Circuit case. I think we disagree with both drafts in the sense that we believe that the ranked choice vote is clearly separate federal elections, regardless of how Maine's efficient process is. They are, under federal law, separate elections. In terms of the comments that we, do you want me to go through it? Or okay. So the major concern we had is that the objections to the request seem to fall in a couple of categories. One is that, well, you can't practically spend money, but I think without going into too much detail, it doesn't really matter. Whether or not you can practically exercise a right doesn't preclude the fact that you have a right. And then we did come up with suggest a few possible uses for funds that would be consistent with the Act in the event that we are correct that they are multiple elections. The second is this question of, well, the election occurs November 5th, and that's the due date, and that's the day of the election. And interestingly, I was in another matter recently where it was pointed out that something like 60% of votes now occur prior to election day. And so, in fact, election day is really just the last day to be of an election process. But ultimately, the statute itself doesn't preclude a runoff election occurring on election day. It simply talks about the fact that the first election has to happen on that day, the general election. It doesn't preclude the runoff from occurring there. And then we talked a little bit about the UOCAVA voters, the Uniformed Overseas Civilian and Absentee Voter Act voters. And so in Georgia, for example, you have voters who receive a primary election ballot and a general election ballot, and it is essentially a ranked choice ballot. It asks them who their candidate is, and then it also tells them and who's your second choice in the runoff. And so in that environment, you have voters who are casting both of these votes at one point. But it's the fact that that voting process, the act of voting occurs when it occurs and only occurs at one time, does not mean that those two separate elections are one individual election. Because ultimately, an election is the selection of candidates, a group of candidates by the voters. And this RCV process, while a very, very efficient system, and I don't dispute Maine's right to have an efficient process here, it is a series of decisions between different groups of candidates and different people casting votes. And the efficiency of that process doesn't change that under federal election law, it is in fact two separate elections. I was thinking on the ride over here this morning that one of the interesting problems that you have here is that nobody was thinking about this when they drafted the law or the regulations. And RCV as a concept, whether or not it's good or bad, is sort of irrelevant. It's you know, the states have the right to set up their processes. But they're shoehorning a state process into the federal regulatory framework. It doesn't alter that federal regulatory framework that sets what an election is. And, you know, somewhat jokingly, you know, if a legislature were to say, we define election as the governor selecting a candidate for office, you know, that is still, they're defining an election that way, but no one would think that's actually an election. And certainly, obviously, it would be subject to challenge, but it wouldn't change the nature of our statutes. Similarly, if over in Vermont, they were to decide we're going to redefine our election process and change the name to Maple Syrup Surprise, it's still an election and it's still subject to federal election law. So the way in which a state exercises its constitutional prerogative to structure and schedule its elections doesn't change the fact that you have an election amongst a group of candidates with votes being cast, and then there's a subsequent election of different group of candidates with different sets of voters. And so we think that this is clearly a sequence of elections. Obviously, it wasn't intended by the folks in Maine. I don't think anyone really thought about it. And it's clearly not envisioned within the statute when it was written. But as a practical matter, it is what the statute says. They are elections, and each round should qualify for a separate contribution.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. I looked at the statute in Maine, and so I appreciate that you alluded to the Maine statute, but I wasn't able to find out what is the, if you know, is there a mechanism for what happens if two candidates in the ranked choice system both come out of the first round with the exact same number of votes?
So I'm not an attorney barred in Maine, and so that's of course not made legal advice, but my understanding is that if there's a tie for the bottom, the last position, there's a coin toss in Maine. So if you have four candidates or three candidates, and two of them, one has a majority, has 40%, and the other two have 30%, exactly the same count, there's a coin toss. And then at the last vote, if there is a tie with the top two, I don't know for sure, but I think it is also a coin toss.
So even if it's you get down to two candidates,
right, and it's a flat out tie,
and it's a straight up tie, mm-hmm. It is, instead of there being another election of any type, a runoff, if you will, it's just a coin toss.
I believe that's the case, but I'm not 100% certain.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Ms. Rufner.
I don't think the coin toss for the top two would be the case. If you have four candidates and you're winnowing down to three, you could choose or you could eliminate one with a coin toss. But even if the top two have the exact same number of votes, you would still just move those on to the next round of tabulation.
Right. But if it were the final round and there were only two candidates remaining and it were a tie,
right. Yeah.
Then that would also be a coin toss decision.
Yeah, I think so.
I understand that Mr. Backer is not giving us a 100% guarantee.
Well, and it was confusing for me, too. That's why I asked the question. I mean, maybe somebody had a better understanding.
You know, by the way, speaking to the comment by the League of Women Voters of Maine, Fair Vote, and Represent Us, you know, one thing they pointed out in their description is that you don't have to have multiple rounds. If somebody wins the election on the first round, it has a majority vote at the first round of voting. That's it. It's over. And so you're not, you know, there is no separate second calculation. And to me, I think that's a uniquely distinctive feature of the fact that you have an election, it occurs. You have a winner or you don't have a winner. And then if you don't have a winner, you're going to a runoff. Yes, it's an instant runoff. And yes, the statute is very well written the state statute is written in order to conserve state resources. I mean, we all know elections are ridiculously expensive purely from an administrative perspective. And so there's a great efficiency to be had in ranked choice voting. But under federal election law, you have an election. It has occurred. And then you're making a separate selection after that. I'm sympathetic to the idea that, well, really, wouldn't this make sense if we did it this way? And if that's how the rule is to be, the law was to be interpreted. But that strikes me as something more appropriate for like a rulemaking process of how ranked choice voting rounds might perhaps be, in that statute. But as the statute is written, I think on its face, it is pretty, the federal statute is clear to me that it is separate rounds of voting.
And then my other question had to do with, if the candidate were allowed to raise two sets of funds, one for the initial round of voting and then one for a second round of voting, or in this particular instance, the second round of counting, would it be practically possible to run a series of ads or mail pieces that say, vote for me, Trey Trainer, as your first choice, and then to target an audience who maybe I know I'm not their first choice, but for me to run a series of ads saying, vote for me as your second choice? Would I be campaigning in the two separate elections at that point?
So it's an interesting question. We thought about it a bit because if it's a runoff election, you can't spend funds from a runoff election until you're in that runoff election. And so so there is a distinction with Busby on the one hand, where you had two separate elections and you could ask people to write in both places. But in our view, notwithstanding the fact that you can have multiple elections on one single day, a runoff is still a subsequent election, and you shouldn't be spending dollars prior to that election in that account. In fact, I think the one probably the last AO on this was the Niger Innes AO that I also was on, and I believe that there's only a very limited number of expenses that you can spend preemptively funds for a subsequent election, things like fully refundable deposits, for example. Having said that, one, you could contract for expenditures that are related to that period to only be paid if and when you hit that period. For example, what we referenced in our comment was the cost of auditing and monitoring that particular piece of the election, the second part of it, potential research and legal challenges to it.
Colleagues, any other questions for OGC or counsel for the requester? Okay, maybe some appropriate motions. Vice Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The drafts, as has been noted, are pretty similar. I was comfortable with draft A, but I'm also comfortable with draft B. So in the interest of perhaps a better chance of success in advisory opinion 2024-12 McCutcheon, I move approval of agenda document number 24-38-B, otherwise known as draft B.
Thank you very much for that, Vice Chair. I appreciate that expeditiousness. Colleagues, is there any debate on that motion to approve draft B? Okay, seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed say no.
I'm abstaining, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, that motion is going to carry by a vote of 5-0. Myself, Commissioner Dickerson, Commissioner Lindebaum, Commissioner Broussard, and the Vice Chair in favor, and Commissioner Trainer having abstained. Thank you very much to Council for the Requesters for your time. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.